This is Betty Abramson. Tonight is October 31st, 1990, Halloween night. I'm going to conduct an interview with Mr. Harold Rosen for the Jewish Community Center Family History Project. Mr. Rosen, would you please give us your name, address, and if you wish, your telephone number?
My name is Harold Rosen. I live at 5100 Brownsboro Road, Louisville, Kentucky. My telephone number is 426-7777.
May I ask when your birthday is?
I was born September 20th, 1915.
Where were you born?
I was born in Montreal, Quebec, Canada.
In Canada?
Yes.
What were your parents' names, please?
My father's name was Zalman George Rosen. My mother's name was Anna Wasserman Rosen.
Were they born in Canada also?
No, they were born in Romania, one in a town called Dorhoi and the other in a town called Botoșan, both of which are about 200 miles north of Bucharest, the capital, very close to the Russian border.
Harold, were they married in Romania?
Yes, they were married in Romania sometime in the early 1890s.
Why did they decide to leave Romania, may I ask?
To the best of my knowledge, there was some kind of conscription going on in Romania. My father at that time was about close to 30 years old, or a little over 30. With three children, my mother was pregnant, and he didn't want to have to go in the army because he had a family to support, so they decided to leave.
You know, even at that time, with two adults and three little children, it must have been costly going from Romania to Canada.
I'm sure it was. Of course, I don't have any details. I never did hear the story of how their financial status permitted them to do these things, but obviously they had sufficient funds to make the trip.
Did they go directly from Romania to Canada, or did they stop along the way?
They went from Romania to England and were there for a short while, and then came by ship from England to Quebec. And by the way, the fourth child was born on that ship and was named after the ship, by the way.
Which was?
Champlain. The name of the ship was the Lake Champlain.
How very interesting.
And it was a custom in those days to name a child born on ship after with the name of the ship.
How very interesting.
We always kid him, said it's a good thing it wasn't Lusitania.
Let me ask you, was there any particular reason why they went to the place they went in Canada? Did you have any relatives living there?
Yes, my mother did. My father had no relatives at all in North America, never did all his life, as a matter of fact. But my mother did have some siblings, and I'm not sure which ones were there in Quebec, and that's the reason they went there.
Did your father keep up with any of his family after he got to Quebec?
By correspondence, yes, but he never saw them again.
He never did?
No.
At the time that you were in this neighborhood and in Quebec, were there other people in, like aunts and uncles in your household, or did they come from Romania to Canada to visit you and then go on about their business?
Well, first of all, I was never in Quebec. I was born in Montreal after they left Quebec. I did have one aunt and her family who lived in Montreal. Nobody else lived with us in our home. No, but there were other siblings of my mother's there at the time.
Could you give us a little, it's so interesting, a little idea of what life was like in Montreal when you were young? What was the neighborhood like?
Well, of course, I can't remember all the way back, but I can remember starting school. I must explain this, that Montreal at that time, and to this day to some extent, still has a pattern of being a very ethnic community, in that there are three distinct groups the French Catholics, the English Protestants, and the Jews. And they all sort of lived in their own neighborhoods where there was some mingling, but generally they're very distinct. I naturally was brought up in a Jewish neighborhood. I went to the public schools because the Jewish people went to the Protestant schools. There were two sets of schools. Although they were public schools, they were still the Protestant board of school commissioners. So we went to those schools. But I also went to Hebrew school, and everything was oriented to Judaism where we lived.
Within your own household, how did you celebrate the Sabbath? How did you celebrate the Jewish holidays? Did you celebrate them all?
Yes, my parents were very traditionally Orthodox, and we observed the Sabbath. We observed all the holidays to the fullest.
Did you keep kosher?
My mother kept kosher, and all the necessary sets of dishes, both for Passover and regular.
Was it easy to get kosher meat, kosher foods at that time?
Yes, very, because there were kosher butchers and everything all around the place.
Uh-huh. Well, did you live within walking distance? I mean, was this everything was close by to school, to the kosher butcher, and so forth and so on?
You had to go to the school in your neighborhood because there were districts, so obviously it was very close, just a few blocks away. The synagogues, there were a dime a dozen. They were all over the place, everywhere.
Were they broken down into Orthodox? Was there Reform and was there Conservative at the time?
At that time and until very recently, there was only one Reform temple in Montreal, Temple Emmanuel. And since that time, I know that there are some conservative synagogues, but mostly Orthodox.
Harold, how did you get from Montreal, Canada, to Louisville, Kentucky?
Well, I came by way of Charleston, West Virginia, Washington, D.C., and Dayton, Ohio. Well, to go back to why I left, I graduated from high school in 1932, and at that time was in the midst of the Depression, and there was no such thing as trying to work and going to college at the same time, for one reason, that the only university, McGill University, only had day classes, and the second thing is you couldn't get a job. There were no jobs available. So after a year of floundering around, I finally was able to get a job in Charleston. Left home, went there, and at the same time was able to get some college work while I was working, and that started me working in the United States. And
Harold, how come you picked Charleston? You say you got a job in Charleston. Why Charleston?
Well,
West Virginia, I assume.
Oh yes, Charleston, West Virginia. My youngest brother, who is 10 years older than I am, had left home many years prior to that and was able to get me this job in Charleston.
Can I back up a little bit? Your youngest brother, who was 10 years older than you, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
Well, I had four brothers and two sisters. One of them passed away. My one brother passed away 2 years ago. There are six of us left today. And I'm the youngest of the six, but the oldest is 92.
I would say longevity definitely runs in your family, and may it continue. Okay, let's get back to Charleston. You went to Charleston, West Virginia, and what did you do there?
Well, I went to work for what was then the Liggett Drug Company, which now is extinct, but was a very large national chain. I did display and advertising work for them, window trimming, and then later got into advertising, and then I worked for the company in Washington, D.C. after that, and then in Dayton, Ohio, and rather than accept a transfer back to Washington in 1937, I left Liggett's and started in the real estate business.
All right, Harold, how did you get to Louisville, Kentucky?
Well, in 1940, you know, they had that big lottery in the United States where every male between the ages of 21 and 35 had to register for the draft, and I was in that category. I registered, and I was also one of the lucky ones to draw a very low number, so I was on the second call for the draft, and as a result, I was drafted in February 1941, sent to Fort Thomas for induction, and then to Fort Knox, where I got my basic training.
Basic training. So actually, Fort Knox was your introduction to Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, it was. Obviously, many of the so-called civilian soldiers at Fort Knox came into Louisville weekends. And we met people here. As a matter of fact, we used to go to the Jewish Community Center, the old YMHA, at 2nd and York.
Can you tell me, we've had some talk about that. Can you tell me what your feelings as a soldier who was at Fort Knox, how did you feel about coming into the old YMHA, as we called it? Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I met some very nice people who were very kind to me. I was able to have a semblance of the social life because of the people that I had met. And we looked forward to coming into Louisville and spending our weekends here.
Did you go to any of the dances at the HA, or did you eat at any of the... I understand they had a breakfast for the soldiers.
Yes, but I went to the dances because dancing has always been one of my favorite hobbies and still is to this day. Fortunately, I married a girl who also liked to dance, and we still do it today.
Oh, you got married. Was she a Louisville native, the girl you married?
Very much so.
Did you meet her at the YMHA?
No, I didn't. Actually, I met her on a blind date, but that's another story.
We happen to be lucky enough tonight to have Selma Rosen with us, who was the blind date that Harold met and married. Selma, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Are you a Louisville native?
Yes, I am.
Were you born in Louisville?
Well, if I'm a native, I had been born here.
Were your parents natives?
My parents were both born here. All my grandparents were married here.
Do you know where your grandparents came from?
Yes. I'm not exactly sure who came from where, but some came from Germany, some came from Latvia or Lithuania, which is as
can I ask you another question? What was your name before it was Selma Rosen?
Selma Frances Snyder.
Selma Frances Snyder. And you had always lived here?
Yes.
And you and Harold got married, and obviously he was still in service. Is there anything that you want to tell us about your background as far as where you live and what things were like when you were growing up in Louisville? Your involvement in the Jewish community?
Well, growing up, other than going to Sunday school, I didn't have a lot of involvement with the Jewish community because we did not live in a Jewish neighborhood.
Where did you live?
We lived in the Parkland area.
And the Parkland area was where, Selma?
Was at 28th and Dumanil, where my father and mother had a department store.
Okay, Harold, you and Selma met, and you dated, and I assume then you got married.
Yes, that's correct.
In Louisville?
Yes, in Louisville, 1942.
And were you stationed in Fort Knox?
No, at that time I was stationed in Camp Polk, Louisiana, but I was transferred back to Fort Knox the following year and stayed there for the rest of the war. And we lived in Louisville, and then finally we moved out to Fort Knox, had a house there. And I was separated from the service in January of 1946.
And you decided to settle in Louisville?
Yes, since I had to start from scratch again, I decided that Louisville would be a good place since it was Selma's home and she would be more comfortable here, and which was a very good thing on my part.
Were you comfortable in Louisville? You evidently liked it very much.
Yes, I started my business immediately and was able to move along and I certainly liked the community. I liked people I met, people I did business with, the people I socialized with, and Louisville became my home.
You and Selma have children?
Yes, we have two children, a son, Larry, and a daughter, Ruby Anna, both of whom are married, and each of which has two children.
And their names?
Larry's children are Stacy and Sean, and Ruby Anna's are Jeffrey and Lori.
Do they all live in Louisville?
No, Larry and his family live in Louisville, except that his daughter now lives in Philadelphia. She graduated from college a year ago, and Sean, his son, is a senior at Washington University. Ruby Anna and her family live in Minneapolis.
I know that you've been very involved in so many things in Louisville. Can you tell me some of the religious involvement you've had? And I know you've had many civic involvements.
Well, I became active in our temple, Temple Adith Israel, soon after I settled in Louisville, and was elected to the board, and went through all the chairs, finally became president, and served as president of the temple board.
When was that?
I was president in 1963 to 1965, and have been a life member of the board ever since.
Very interesting. And can I ask, where did you live, where did you and Selma live when you first married? Where was your first home in Louisville?
We bought a house. Well, actually, we had a home in the West End on Larchmont Avenue when I was still at Fort Knox. But after I got out of the service, we bought a house on Deerwood in the Highlands, lived there for 10 years, and bought another house in the Rock Creek area, lived there until we moved here in 1974 at the Glenview on Brownsburg Road.
How would you compare the house you lived in on Deerwood to where you live now? Were you convenient to a drugstore? Were you convenient to a grocery at the time?
Well, not as convenient as we are today in this location because, first of all, we didn't have the shopping centers in 1946 to 56 that we have today. And secondly, we were away from Bardstown Road where most of the shopping was. So it was convenient, but not actually walking distance.
Did your children go to school in the Deer Park area?
Well, yes, Deerwood, which is right next
Deerwood.
To Deer Park. Yes, the schools were within walking distance, both the elementary and the junior high, as they were called.
Do you remember the names of the schools?
Yes, one was Longfellow and the other was Highland Junior High.
And could they walk to school?
Oh, yes.
They go to high school?
Yes, they both went to high school, but of course, Atherton at that time was down on Morton Avenue, where Larry went. We had a carpool, I believe, in those days. And then by the time Ruby Anna went to high school, we had already moved to the Rock Creek area, and she had to be in a carpool because that was too far away from where we lived.
Okay. Let's get into your civic activities, if you don't mind. I know you've been very involved in many, many activities. Could you tell us about some?
Yeah, well, you asked about Jewish community activities. Well, I also served as a member of the board of the Jewish Hospital for 17 years until last year, and I was very active in the hospital activities. As far as other civic work is concerned, I've been involved, I think they... In the resume that is given on me, I served as president or member of the board of some 28 organizations in the community.
That's quite a few organizations. I'm sure along the way you've had your favorites.
Well, at the time that I worked in something, it was a favorite, otherwise I wouldn't have been working in it. But yes, there were some, and to this day, what I'm involved with, are things that I enjoy doing, and I did enjoy much of the work that I did before. I've always enjoyed community work because it's been a philosophy of mine, if you want to call it that, that when you get something out of a community, you should always give something back to it. And so I felt that by not just for that reason, but it was an obligation that I had to the community to serve and do what I could.
I seem to hear your name connected with so many organizations. Were there any that you instigated that were not in effect until you found out about them and decided to bring them to Louisville?
Well, there were a number of activities I was involved with where I started perhaps some adjuncts to them. I'm thinking of the Chamber of Commerce as one instance. I'm a charter member, by the way, of the Chamber, and we instituted a planning and zoning committee back in 1963, and I was the first chairman of that. And speaking about instigating new activities, in 1946, right after I got out of the Army, I met a young man who was very active at his church, the Highland Presbyterian Church. His name is Bill Harvin. He and I became very good friends, and with our wives, the four of us made a foursome and did a lot of things together. And one night we were having a cookout at his home, and one of us said, you know, why couldn't we get our brotherhoods at our temple and church to do what we are doing? In other words, get together. And that was the beginning of something that went on for many years. We were the first to introduce the temple and church joint brotherhood meetings each year, Brotherhood Week, which was adopted by many churches and synagogues in the community and went on for many years. As a matter of fact, Bill and I appeared on television in 1953, I think it was, the first simulcast made, WHAS and WAVE, to receive a national award for the work that we had done in starting this program.
Very, very interesting. Tell me a little bit about some of the other organizations. You are in the real estate business at this time, I assume.
Well,
that's how you made your money.
Yes and no. I actually, 10 years ago, I decided that I was going to cut out my work and devote all of my time to civic and community work, which I have been doing all that time, for the past 10 years, that is, on a full-time basis. In other words, I'm a full-time volunteer and I don't get paid for it. But I work harder now, so Selma says, than I ever did in my life. But the point is that I do have a couple of clients who won't let go, and I still handle some work for them. In this 10-year period that I told you about, since 1965, I immediately went into the Sister City program, first as vice president for about a year, and then as president for 2 years and project director for another 2 years.
Will you please explain what you mean by Sister City?
Louisville is part of the International Sister City Program. We have four, we used to have five, but we now have four sister cities where we share a lot of things together and have exchange programs, students, social, business, all kinds of activities. And during my time of involvement with it, I did introduce some new programs, even exchanging police officers.
What are our sister cities?
We have Mainz, Germany, Montpellier, France, Quito, Ecuador, and Tamale in Ghana, in Africa.
Have you ever been to any of these cities?
We've been to three of them, one that no longer is a sister city. We've been to Mainz several times, we've been to Montpellier a few times, and we went to Dublin once, but Dublin is no longer a sister city.
Have you been to Quito?
No. Although we've had visitors from Quito and had some very good friends. As a matter of fact, the ambassador from Quito and his wife were friends of ours. They even stayed with us when they came to speak at a dinner that we were giving for the as a Quito project.
That sounds like it's very interesting. Do you travel a lot?
Yes, we travel a lot. We just completed our 39th trip to Europe last week.
Your 39th trip to Europe. That's a lot of trips to Europe.
Mm-hmm. We enjoy it. We do a lot of travel.
Evidently you enjoy Europe. Your background in Montreal, does that have anything to do with your speaking French fluently, maybe?
Well, I won't say fluently, but both of us can speak French well enough to communicate, to be understood, to understand, and to get along.
Other than Europe, do you travel anyplace else?
We've been to the Orient a number of times. We've been to South America, and we take a lot of cruises.
You also said you love to dance. Do you continue doing this?
Any opportunity we have. Right after I left the Sister City program, I was asked by the Attorney General to serve as a special assistant to market the Child Victims Trust Fund, which had just been enacted by the legislature the year before.
You're talking about the Attorney General of the state of Kentucky?
That's right. Who now is our county judge, Dave Armstrong. And as a matter of fact, I still am a special assistant to the present Attorney General, although I'm not doing as much today as I did initially to get the program started in the state. And it has been going over very well. That was the one thing. And then also, right after that time, while I'd had the idea in my mind for few years, I could never sell it to anybody, but what is today ProPower was an idea that I had, and that is to utilize the talents of retired professional people for the benefit of the community, for nonprofit organizations. And we just had our fourth anniversary in August. We have a very well-staffed office now, and we have a lot of volunteers who are serving a lot of agencies.
Exactly. You say ProPower is a nonprofit for nonprofit organizations. Would you explain that a little bit more?
I guess I should elaborate to this extent. There are many, many volunteers doing many types of work for the benefit of mankind, womankind, humankind, whatever you wish. I felt there was one void, and that was that while every volunteer group is serving a purpose, there was no one group actually utilizing the talents and expertise of professionals and executives who had so much to offer, and just because they had been retired, they were being thrown on the dump heap and not doing anything. My idea was to put these people to work as consultants and advisors for three categories of nonprofit organizations, which are the human services agencies, like all the health-related ones, cancer, heart, muscular dystrophy, diabetes, and so on, plus the arts, which are considered, we serve the Kentucky Center for the Arts, the Fund for the Arts, the library stations, the library itself, plus government agencies and departments is another entity, and the third category is educational institutions. And we now serve seven departments at the University of Louisville, Bellarmine College, IUS. And when I say serve, we render consulting services to their various departments in those entities, plus the Jefferson County Board of Education, Catholic School Board, and anything that is educational.
It sounds very involved. Do the volunteers come to you? Do you recruit the volunteers? How does it work?
Both. We have a very good press relationship with the media, I should say, radio, television, and newspapers, magazines. We do get a lot of publicity. And, of course, anytime I hear of anybody who's retired and wants to do something, I hand them a card right away and try to enlist them and put them to work. But they come to us now. I mean, we're known well enough in the community that we're constantly receiving calls. ProPower, by the way, is an acronym for professional power, It's a copyright word, and the program is copyright. And we are having discussions now with about 6 mayors and governors throughout the country who are interested in establishing prototypes in their communities or in their states. Matter of fact, I have a visitor coming in next week from another state, and I'm talking on the phone this week with somebody in Jackson, Mississippi, who wants to start one there.
In other words, you consult, they call you, you consult with them, and advise them as... types of questions would they come to you, the professional pro power, at what types of questions would they ask you that they need help with?
Well, it depends on the organization. The people with expertise that we have, our volunteers, it's a very wide, well actually there's 35 different areas that we list, and they'll include office management, even the Jewish Hospital gift shop. The operation of the gift shop, as we've done for some other hospitals, and the museum, and the zoo. To try to be specific, it's a little difficult for me at this time, but I will generalize by saying that we do have requests in many, many areas, but primarily in the office management, personnel, operational point of view.
Would an organization call you and say, Mr. Rosen, do you have any expert or anyone who has ever been involved in, you've obviously said managing a gift shop or in an office, but they call you with a problem that they may have and you say, yes, we will see if we can fill this, if we have someone who can help you. Is that the way that it works?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, every agency must fill out both a questionnaire and a job description of what they specifically need in a volunteer, that is, in the expertise of a volunteer, so that we can match that with the experiences of our volunteers. I mentioned earlier that I was doing some work with the Attorney General's office with the Child Victims Trust Fund, which is, of course, designed to assist child sexual abuse and exploitation and how to prevent it and what to do in communities to prevent it. Just a little over a year ago, I was asked to serve and accepted the assignment of being a special assistant to the president of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in Washington, and I operate that job. I perform that job from my local office, and the job consists of some general marketing nationally for this program. I should mention that the National Center is the national clearinghouse for missing children. They've had a tremendous experience since they started in 1984. And we're very pleased and proud of the work that is being done. All this, of course, ties in with the type of work that I'm doing. I think it would be of interest to tell you how the National Center started. President Reagan established it in 1984, which was, I believe, a year after the Gottlieb child was kidnapped. I believe I'm correct on those dates. But it was established...
The Gottlieb child?
Gottlieb child here in Louisville. And as a matter of fact, that probably triggered the idea of getting an organization started. One of the first, one of the co-founders is Ernie Allen, who today is president, and as many of you will know, that Ernie Allen was very prominent in local government affairs. He assumed the job of presidency a year ago. As a matter of fact, he's the one who got me into the job because I've worked with Ernie for 10 years, but also it has other Louisville ties.
May I ask you one other thing? We're always getting things in the mail with missing children. We see on television pictures of missing children. Is this the organization that you're referring to? Is this the the base organization?
Yes, this is the one that is behind all of these public notices that you see or hear about, television and whatever. But I was going to mention that in addition to Ernie and myself having Louisville ties to the national organization, the vice president, chief operational officer, is a man by the name of John Raven, who was the sergeant of the local missing child unit that was very much involved in the Gottlieb case when it started. And he did so much on that, and it became so well recognized that they asked him to come to Washington.
You've talked about your civic organization work, and my goodness, you really have done a lot. While you've been doing these things, have there been any unusual or fun things that you might want to share with us?
Well, I guess there have been quite a few. I failed to mention that for a year I was chief of protocol at City Hall. That was right after my sister city involvement. And on a very short notice, we received word that the mayor of Quito and his wife were coming to Louisville for Derby. And instead of two of them, five people descended upon us, and we had to scurry around, get tickets for the Derby, have escorts for them, dinners and everything else, which we managed, but it was hectic, but we did that.
Was it fun?
Yes, we enjoyed it, because, of course, we participated in everything that was done. But I think one of the most interesting experiences we had was, when I say we, I mean Selma shared all these with me. When I mentioned the ambassador from Ecuador to Washington, he and his wife became very good friends of ours, and I was having a dinner to select the winner of a sweepstakes for a trip to Quito that we had more or less developed and engineered, so to speak. And ambassador agreed to be the speaker at this dinner on a Sunday night. He came to Louisville. He was going to come to Louisville on Friday night and stay here over the weekend and go back Monday. And there they stayed with us at our apartment. But he called me Friday morning to tell me that he had to have a state dinner. He couldn't come till Saturday morning. But in the meantime, I had made arrangements. He liked horses. We were going to take him to some farms. We have a very good friend who owns one of the big farms in Paris, Kentucky, and we're going to have him visit those farms, see a breeding farm and everything else for the Saturday that they were here, and of course other arrangements were made for dinners. But when he called me and told me that he couldn't arrive till Saturday, that killed our plan, because by the time we went to Lexington in Paris and came back and then in time to clean up for dinner, it wouldn't do. So fortunately I called the Attorney General, and he furnished us with a helicopter.
A helicopter?
Yes. We met the ambassador and his wife at the airport, brought them to the apartment, they unpacked, and exactly 12 o'clock, the helicopter landed across the street from our apartment in the temple lot, picked us up, took us to Lexington, then to Paris, came back over to Frankfurt, visited the farms, and got us home before 6 o'clock that evening.
That sounds like quite an interesting experience.
It was interesting for us, for them, and we really, of course, everybody was awestruck when they saw the helicopter landing at the temple lot.
There's a lot of things that go on in the temple lot. I don't know if a helicopter has ever been there before.
Other activities. One instance, I believe it was when the mayor from Quito and his group were here, we had police escorts that took us to the governor's breakfast Saturday morning, took us to the dinner, the three dinners that were planned for them, and we had sirens and police escorts. I think we made it from after the Derby ended Saturday up to our apartment here in about 7 or 8 minutes in police cars with sirens.
Well, I know you were impressed. I'm impressed. Were the people that you were escorting impressed?
Very much so, believe me.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Harold. Thank you, Selma, for your time. I've appreciated this. I know the people who will hear it will appreciate it. You've done so much for Louisville, even though you say you were not born in Louisville, Selma was. Thank you so much for coming to our community and to adding to our community and in such a wonderful way.